You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name is Tony East, one of the hosts of the show. I cover the team for the West Indianapolis Community News and Forbes. And today, we're continuing the Tour de Media, week three. And this week, joining me on the other line to talk all things Pacers on a surprisingly newsy day, Scott Agnes from The Athletic. Scott, first of all, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, but it took week three to get me on. Dang, that hurts.
Well, Tim Sinclair was week one.
That's my guy. Nice.
Tim was awesome. He was really insightful. Last week was Kevin Bowen, and then you are week three here.
I feel bad for people like Tim, right? Like, this is his livelihood. Like, he has one other gig, but outside of this, he works so many games. And realistically, right now, most of those checks aren't coming in. Those are the people, along with those that have lost their jobs, are the ones I really feel for.
I know, me too. Well, he even said his TV gig he does, he can only go every other week because they're having him and his host alternate when they go.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So many of my friends here in local TV are doing it from their kitchen or their bedroom or like various spots. So that's our new reality at the moment.
It is. And speaking of, that was my first note on the things to ask Scott about is what are you doing during these times of no games? I mean, you can still ride and go interview Jeff Foster or something, but what have you been doing to fill the time?
Yeah, so a lot of what I'm doing is the same. The difference is I'm saving time at night because I don't have games both to cover and watch. But outside of that, basically I'm just not having practice or shoot arounds and then games. But otherwise, I still have my weekly podcast that I'm producing. I still have stories that I'm continuing to write. You mentioned Jeff Foster, and I spoke with him over the weekend. I figured this was a good time to catch up, if you will, with some of these old legends, local legends, guys maybe we haven't heard from. And I remember early on, and maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I tried to get Jeff Foster, and he didn't want to do any interviews. So on a whim, I was like, hey, let me shoot him a text and see if maybe his mind's changed. Maybe he has additional free time that he's willing to give me. And he was great. We talked for almost 30 minutes and talked about what he's up to now in investments, but also the look back at key moments from when he was with the franchise.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. I'll jump to that one now. When I typed this question down for you, by the way, I accidentally typed Scott Foster at first because apparently his name just rings in my head more often than Jeff's does. What was cool?
That is a big technical foul.
I know. I even typed Scott in my line, so I'd remember to say.
I have to mention that because that's my running joke. I quit tweeting it. Tony, but at the same time, anytime Scott Foster is working a game, I know there's a technical coming.
Did he work the Jimmy Butler TJ Warren game this year? I can't remember.
I don't remember either.
That's one of the only techs I remember this season.
Oh, Pacers have had a lot. I mean, Nate McMillan had a couple in his last few weeks.
Yeah,
he got agitated. Aaron Holiday got a couple. The rare ejection from Justin Holiday. It's just been a strange season.
It has been strange.
That started in India, and now it is.
There's so many random ones that stick out to me. Like Thad Young's ejection against the Heat last year.
That was the worst. That was laughable. I remember that was my story that night in Miami. And reviewing it on film, I didn't like it. And then it surprised me because the next season, we were able to talk with Joey Crawford, and we specifically showed that video. And he was like, yeah, that's very much a play that you kind of have to be there to have a feel for it, but I probably wouldn't go that far. And I don't see it as well. I could see a flagrant one, but it certainly wasn't a flagrant two.
Yeah, it was something.
We're talking about all kinds of things, and that's what we do during stoppages, don't we?
It's fun. You can cover all the things you like think about all the time, but you don't ever get to like bring up, you know? It's like, oh, yeah, we can talk about 100%. Thaddeus Young's technical foul from last year. Jeff Foster, really cool story. I did not know he was the tiniest person ever when he was young in high school. That was fantastic. What did you find cool about talking to him?
The fact that he had twins, I guess I didn't realize that. I knew he had a couple kids, but I didn't realize they were twins. And to the height thing, the fact that the son right now at the same age, obviously, is 5 inches shorter than she is. And she's more of a prolific athlete. He's a big cross-country runner. I think the other thing was just how Jeff Foster – how much of an impact his pre-draft workout had.
Yeah.
That was one thing when I talked to a couple people before the interview, they specifically said you have to ask him about, and that paid off because, I mean, he gave the money quote of Larry Bird coming up to him and saying, hey, are you tough enough? And of course, in hindsight, that's a laughable question. Right. Like, duh, that's who he is, right? But at the time, according to him, he said his response is, I am. I'm a lion. I went nuts. Occasionally, you probably have it in our interviews. You're taking notes or you're maybe looking down at things you want to ask or money quotes. That was a big circle for me. I go, yeah, that's a good one. I hadn't heard that one before.
Yeah, they traded for him on draft night, right? They loved him.
Yeah, that was a big draft for them as well because they got Jonathan Bender out of that draft as part of not different deal. But the other interesting thing, and I didn't have time necessarily to include it here in my story, but people can hear the full conversation on the podcast, was how it's interesting to me how one of Jeff Foster, who's now in investments, one of the things he invested in is wellness and health, and he has chronic back issues. That's, of course, why he retired. And Jonathan Bender's career completely ruined due to injuries. And what he has gone into after basketball and after in playing days is trying to create a device that would have allowed for him to play and that eases that pain. And I found that fascinating considering same Pacer team and same exact draft they were both a part of.
Yeah, that's super unfortunate for that draft, although Foster turned out to have an excellent career. We're currently every Monday, Scott, rewatching the 2000 NBA Finals for shows. And it's pretty funny with Jeff Foster how during like that first finals run, he and Zan Tabak were used as like Shaq dummies in practices. Like that's how this dude's career starts for the Pacers.
Yeah, and I mentioned that to him, and he noted how, and I think like any of us, you're a little naive to it if you experience that early success. I think a guy like Pat McAfee, the former punter for the Colts, went to the Super Bowl in his rookie season, and you just think, oh, maybe this is the new normal. I'm on a good team and a good franchise where you're going to have success. Well, the reality is they never reached the finals again, despite a couple challenges in what, 03 and 04 each. And then I tried to go down that path of talking about the what ifs. It's not necessarily my favorite thing to do because it is purely speculative, but I did find it interesting just the fact that he had such an interesting game. I think it was game 5 of the semifinals. And he doesn't remember the game at all, but his wife does. He said she remembers how the fans, like Reggie, chanting Reggie, they were chanting Foster. That's another good tidbit that comes out of it. Those are the things you hope to pull out of these stories. You want new stories. You want something different, not just, you know, what was it like to have a 13-year career?
Yeah, it was exhilarating. I got paid millions of dollars, but you remember your name getting chanted in the play.
That was something I had to look up to, Tony. I was curious, especially because money's just so much different nowadays. According to Basketball Reference, he earned over $50 million. That's a hell of a career for a guy that's probably a little bit more than a role player, right? He was a starter for the significant portion of his career, but never a star, never in consideration for an all-star, never made more than, you know, $6.5 million per year.
Yeah. It's like the perfect Pacer, right? Like gritty, tries hard, always good off the bench.
I think every team needs a guy like him.
Yeah.
That does the selfless things, the guy that's diving on the floor, that's going after loose balls, that doesn't necessarily care about starting or his salary or things like that. And along the same lines, the tough guy. The guy that you mentioned, TJ Warren, and against Jimmy Butler, the guy that's not backing down, that's not taking blank. I don't know if we can cuss on here, but that sort of thing. Yeah, you need a guy on your roster that's not taking shit and will back everybody up.
Yeah. I love that about TJ Warren now. It's just like Jakar Sampson always talks about how he brings that dog. TJ Warren will never say it, but TJ Warren also brings it.
Jakar's too much of a lovable guy.
I know. He's
like LaVoy Allen. I can't see LaVoy Allen starting a fight. He's too much of a lovable teddy bear, let's say. Yeah. And by the way, that was my last catching up. That's why I thought about it with LaVoy Allen.
Oh, I read that one too. That one was good. Speaking of Jakar Sampson, let's move to the current team. Kevin Pritchard dropping in on us all today. The lovely media press conference. We got to talk about some coronavirus stuff, some draft stuff, some this and that. I mean, it was all over the place. What was your biggest takeaway from that today?
I would say it's the optimism, Tony, that he seemed to express that the season would resume. And then just how productive that they have seemingly been and the different tasks that he and others within the franchise have taken on. We knew certain things, like guys are trying to work out, that health was obviously going to be better just because of the time off and things like that. But I think just his optimism and how hopeful he was for things to return I understand that nobody truly knows. We all have to pull through it. But if we can, we know how important it would be for all of us, for the players, for money reasons, for games to come back.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we were going to do it, but now the other stuff happened. But I thought we were going to speculate when the league might come back, but I don't want to do that anymore. But it does seem like a lot of people around the league are optimistic, and you know, they're refusing to say, like, we aren't going to play these games, or we don't think these games are going to happen. But I kind of had the same takeaway as you. My headline is that the team is keeping busy. That's what it felt like. Every question, his answer was somewhat lengthy and detailed on, okay, oh, about the player regiments working out. Well, we did this, this, and this, and we sent them this, this, and this, and they talk with this guy every day or this guy every week. Or, oh, the draft process. Well, instead of doing this, we're doing this, this, and this. Or, oh, in the front office, we're doing, you know, we're modeling for these teams and this, this, and that. I was just like, wow, they are really taking this as an opportunity instead of a hindrance. And I thought that was really cool.
There's that, and there's also the fact that Kevin hadn't talked for a while. So there was a list of questions. I had several more if we weren't.
I thought you were about to go like 10 in a row at the end.
I would have been game completely. It was funny. One of them, I think it was Wes, one of the PR members, jumped on and goes, well, guys, you have any more? I kind of chuckled and go, yeah, I got. Yeah, I can keep going. I'll just start. And then we got like two more in after that. But yeah, I went into this knowing we don't know when Pritchard will talk again. He's purposely doesn't like talking with the media, doesn't like being out front. I think very much that's kind of the Pacers persona, right? I think Herb Simon's done one interview in the last several years, the team's owner, whereas it's very different, not wrong, but very different compared to someone like Mark Cuban, where I could probably go online right now and see about five interviews today that Cuban has done. Completely different style. So I thought to talk about being productive, I thought we as a media had to be productive with this time and trying to maximize that. And then a lot of it, I think, could be said for any team. Every team's sending player programs to their guys to work out. They're doing Zoom calls. They're trying to stay connected. So a lot of those things, I think, are a pattern throughout the league.
I also thought it was cool that they hadn't had to test anyone and that they were saving those tests for the public. That was cool.
Yeah, it's good news that nobody needed to be tested. When it comes down to it, we know,
especially Miles, given his family,
right? And that's one thing I did note. How Kevin said, to my knowledge, no one has been tested. Because if I'm Miles and presumably under the same house, living together in Bedford, Texas, right now, after my dad got it, I would eventually want to be tested, I think, even if I wasn't showing symptoms. But maybe we can assume that he wasn't exhibiting symptoms, and so he doesn't know whether or not he's had it, but no need to be tested. That's the other thing in that. He's young enough. He's in good shape. He's not obese. And those are a lot of the factors we've learned that are huge deterrents to all of that.
Yeah. And Miles, after listening to the podcast where he mentioned his father, apparently he's afraid of nothing because he does yoga with wasps, which is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. So I think he'd be fine. Yeah. He could focus his way right through it.
Yeah, that was quite a bizarre story. I know he kind of goes off in the middle of Texas, in the middle of nowhere on a ranch, kind of this private building, and I believe it doesn't have air conditioning either. And that's probably to save money, but also along the same lines, is it's hot yoga and it's not to think about your conditions. Try to make you uncomfortable and lock in your mind. So to hear that extra element that he shared completely is in line with what he and Bridget, his yoga instructor, are trying to do down there.
You think you could do a podcast with wasps flying around?
Oh, no chance. I wouldn't want to.
as soon as one landed on me, the show's over.
Yeah, so dependent on focusing, on thinking about what we're talking about, on thinking ahead, that I feel like in yoga, you're trying to turn your brain off almost. And
right.
So, no, there's too much activity going on. I don't want to even think about that.
Yeah. Speaking of thinking ahead, man, you nailed the segue for me there. I want to talk about this year's team and what's coming up for them. So I guess we'll look back first. What did you think of the season to date? I know that there was some, maybe pessimism is the wrong word, but just they had a lot of new guys. Oladipo was hurt before the season. The two-center experiment. Felt like a lot of national people who aren't zoned in on this team were kind of down on what this year would look like. But it all gelled together really quick and went pretty well. What did you think of the season so far through the games we got?
Yeah, it went about as expected. I think should they had finished it out and probably went on to win 50 games, I don't know how you couldn't say it was better than expected and clearly a success with this group, because we didn't know if or when Victor would return. We know he penciled in kind of that late December, January timeframe, but you just never know entering a season, right? I did laugh at some of the fellow writers that said they would not make the playoffs, because if you followed this franchise, you know entering this year, they'd made it 24 out of 30 years. So just take the odds here, right? Yeah. Like, just take the odds that you know they're probably in a weakened Eastern Conference with probably, or we guess we know now, basically six teams. Chances are they are going to have spots six, seven, or eight at minimum. But yeah, like you mentioned, Tony, there were a lot of questions going in with the newness. What, nine new players, three new starters for the majority of the year. I would have liked to see a little bit more from Jeremy Lamb, I think, with scoring wise, but I think so much of it, even through February, is guys were still becoming accustomed with one another because of so much of the lineup changes. And I think that's the sticking point for me. I wrote this, I think, the last week of the real season that we had is regardless of how this season finished, it's scarred or defined by its injuries, because it seemed like before every press conference, at every media availability, after every practice, the first thing atop our minds is, you know, did Victor practice? How's his progression coming? Is Malcolm going to play next game? How's Doug McDermott's toe? Like, just petty little things continue to add up. I remember game three, Edmund Sumner fractures his ring finger in his home in Detroit and misses a month of the season. And then a couple weeks later, you have Naz Long and Brian Bowen taking Ubers to the Boston airport to fly back to Indy at 3 a.m. Like, that's how this season is going to be remembered for me.
Yeah, Naz and Alize Johnson were in the rotation in the same game this season. Like, they were so banged up the whole way. And I always felt bad for McMillan, both from actually coaching, like, it's really hard to play a rotation like that, but also because for me and you and all the media before the games, his first seven questions are, is Malcolm playing? Is he starting? Is this guy playing? I was like, oh, this is, just feel bad asking this question every single time. But I agree, injuries made it really hard for them to ever get up to speed. And I think they had the right three games where they had the starting five that they wanted to
maybe
all this time.
It was kind of maybe something like that. I don't know. It was frustrating, to your point. Yeah. If you're McMillan, put yourself in his shoes. Number one, I tried doing a rotation, like planning that out in the off season. That's the worst. I think that might be, along with managing egos, one of the most difficult parts of a head coach's job, is finding minutes and minimizing your rotation to the point where you're maximizing it, but also keeping guys happy. And I still don't feel like we saw an answer, for example, with Aaron Holiday. It seemed like he was in, out, and really his last month I thought was really encouraging, but then we come to this abrupt stop.
Yeah, it's tough for him too, because like early in the year, really early, like first 10 games, he was missing everything, but McConnell also didn't fit in well, so it felt like he should play. And McConnell figured it out, and it didn't. And he just got these injury minutes. But then, yeah, Sumner's right behind him, too. It's like, how are we going to get this guy playing time? And before the season, I didn't think Justin Holiday was more than, you know, fill in for injuries and maybe swoop in some forward minutes. Turns out this guy's amazing at basketball, one of the best defenders on the team, can't miss a three. So that all just sorted itself out. But, yeah, I do not envy how he had to handle all that. And he did a really good job. I mean, they clearly have the best, I think, 9-10 guys in the rotation right now. It's going to be hard going forward because they don't lose any of them except for maybe Holiday, although who knows what will happen with that. But it's going to be very interesting to monitor that.
Yeah, and we should clarify Justin Holiday. And I'd be curious to see if he's able to finally get that multi-year deal that he's really wanted. I think he'll value, especially right now where they're kind of in quarantine together, how perfect has this been for him? In a twist of fate of wanting to play with his youngest brother for the first time and excelling. He's the only Pacer. As the oldest Pacer that just turned 31 recently, he's the one that's played in every single game, the only one. There's just so many little things, I'll tell you what, about this season, Tony, that fascinate me, going from TJ McConnell and Justin Holiday totally outperforming expectations to Goga very much looking like a rookie. And not playing the 18 minutes per game I penciled him in for.
Yeah, ooh, man. I really need to see Goga year two with a full offseason, full strength program before I make judgments. And really, you got to give rookies 3 years, but I did not. I thought he'd look a little more NBA ready coming from Europe. But we can talk about that later if you want to. My next question for you, since I said, what'd you think of the Pacers so far? We're going to look forward now. Short and long-term outlook. For this season in a potential playoff series, Miami or Boston, long-term, you know, keeping this team, building from this team. How do you feel about this team right now?
I'd like it. I like the fact that the core is intact for at least two or three years to come, with the lone exception being Victor. And that's kind of its own podcast, right? In its own right.
No,
the fact that the Pacers have to figure something out, I think, with Victor this year becomes a Paul George situation, where can you really go into the final year of his contract unaware of where he stands? And if you do know he wants to move on, then you have to move him, right? You can't, especially in Indiana, in this small market, you can't allow a all-star level player to go away for nothing, which he could do after this season. Certain things you'd consider moving forward, I think, number one, that's your number one priority. Secondly, I think they have to take a look at Nate McMillan. I think he deserves to come back, but regardless of how you feel, I think that's something that I'd spend a week, if I'm the Pacers front office, going through, is your potential coaching options. And a lot of that's interesting in the fact, Tony, that you don't know who's available, because some of the guys that may be fired or contract expires, maybe something changes with their status and they remain there. Guys like Brett Brown in Philly, or like Mike D'Antoni in Houston. So much of this changes what we know about the year, because we don't know how Philly, for example, would have finished the year. And if they had a great year, great playoffs, then Brett Brown probably stays in place. But now, who knows? And then the other big thing, probably of my top three items, would be, what are we doing with Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis? Can you really, starting next year, spend $40 million annually on your starting centers, both of whom are starting, but are a detriment to an extent to both of them? They figured it out a little bit, but I don't think you're really maximizing each other's talents in doing so. So would the starting role and money be better spent elsewhere?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with those three things being the biggest three. I think you mentioned the playoffs for Brett Brown. I think for McMillan, it's you know, not that his seat's ever hot. You know, the team always does comparatively better than expectations. But if they go into the playoffs and get swept again, you have to start thinking that maybe they consider something, just because things have not gone well in the postseason when they're trying to clearly build to go on a playoff run. But I agree with you that I think his job is mostly safe, and the Pacers don't like to have guys, coaches on expiring deals either. And it is his last year next year, I believe, although I'll let you speak to that because you would know better.
Yeah, that's correct. That's part of his three-year extension he signed.
Yeah, the last year is a team option, I believe, or whatever the coaching equivalent of that is. Yeah. So, yeah, next year would be the last year for him. I wonder if there is no playoffs or an abbreviated playoffs, if that kind of helps him, you know, lock in some security there. But yeah, like Kenny Atkins just got fired out of nowhere. Like, you can never really know what to expect on the coaching front. And yeah, on the flip side, I agree with all your player assessments too. With Victor, it's interesting. July 1, they can officially sign him to an extension. Obviously, that's being talked about with them all the time, if they can. If he gives any indication that he will never sign an extension or another deal, I'm with you that you have to do what you can to extract value from him. Although, I think they're going to try everything they can to keep him. It's going to be very interesting to see what impact the falling salary cap could even have on that.
Yeah, and let's briefly extract that. If you're Victor and you're still rehabbing, you still have the comfort of the doctors, of a place that embraces you, that loves you, what is the appeal elsewhere? If you're Victor, Tony, what's the appeal elsewhere?
The only one that people have brought up before is Miami, just because, right, he spends off seasons there. He has training. His trainer is there, I believe. Stanhope is there. He had a house there. Has a house there?
Hold on, let me correct a couple things. For one, right now, notably, he's living in Orlando, in his Orlando home, which I thought was rather interesting. He didn't choose to go to Miami, which obviously has more of a home in Orlando, more space, so maybe that's it. But his basketball trainers are up in Michigan.
Okay.
They moved away from Miami. And he no longer
has... I swear he was training there after rehab, but you would definitely...
No, you're right. No, that changed. You are correct. Okay. This year, as of like December, I want to say, Bryce moved to Michigan.
Okay.
And so
I didn't know that.
No, so this is relatively recent. And I think it was during the All-Star break. In fact, Bryce came down for a couple of days to work with Victor. It was really weird. We saw Chris Brickley work out with Vic for like one weekend. I think back in December. And the other tie to Miami that's no longer relevant is he used to train. No, a different one. He used to train in terms of strength training with David Alexander, who works out with Dwayne Wade, with Chris Paul and others. They separated just before the injury, so there's not that pull as well. His physical therapist travels with him wherever he goes, so that doesn't much matter where he lives. Luke Miller.
I remember seeing David Alexander workouts with Vic, and you know who was there was Devon Reed, the guy they had on the two-way last year. That's the first thing I
Davon, my God.
The first thing I learned about him when he signed with the Pacers.
Well, he lives in Miami, went to Miami, so that makes sense. That was the summer where we had two University of Miami products on the summer league team.
Who was the other one?
It was the big man. I can't remember his name. I could look it up if I really wanted
to. Okay.
Yeah.
The other one for me I was going to say is Wade, right? Because he had the mentorship from him before he went to IU. And, you know, clearly they've been buddy-buddy. He even stole his This Is My City celebration. So I don't know if that has any pull. And obviously Wade's not with that organization anymore. I don't even know if Wade lives in Miami anymore. But that's always one that I thought of. But that's the only team to me because, like you just said, there's all these reasons that Indiana makes so much sense. That Miami's the only team that I think would make any sense for him to consider as a destination, but I still feel like he'd value Indiana more. I have no idea.
Yeah, and the fact that he, he embraces Wade. He likes the weather down there. They're going to have a huge salary cap opening, it appears, depending on how they choose to spend this summer, that there's going to be a spot for a max-type contract. That part all makes it attractive, but at the same time, I'm not I coming from how he came up, right? How much he talked about how he wasn't loved or embraced or wasn't in a good situation and wasn't treated right in his previous, you know, Orlando. He started out as a point guard in OKC. He took a back seat to Russell Westbrook. Now he is the featured guy. I think the only reason you'd want to leave at this point would be if you truly feel like you have no chance of competing for a title, perhaps, or, which I don't see likely, is if they can't come to a number that makes sense for both sides.
Yeah, and maybe the max extension is on the table now. Like the 120% raise makes sense given his injury and all that stuff. So who knows? I'm sure that will be a fun thing we have to talk about all the time next season. I'm kidding. I'm going to hate that. It's going to be awful. Scott, you got anything else you want to talk about?
Put me on the spot like that.
You can say no if you don't.
No, you're good. There's so much to talk about. I mean, it's funny being like this, being our live, I could go down any kind of rabbit hole. Like, for instance, let's take this one, for instance. Where would you like to see games played? Let's assume games return, no fans, and there's no point of doing Bankers Life Fieldhouse because, one, renovations are going on, and two, you have no fans.
Okay, my update there to are, that.
The I obvious arguments would be St. Vincent Center, would be maybe Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Is Pepsi Coliseum too big? That could be it.
No, that's possible, but similar to Hinkle Fieldhouse, is all that necessary?
Right. Yeah, or I don't even know.
I'll take another option and say none of the above, because if games would resume, they'd be in somewhere like Vegas.
Yeah, Thomas and Mack Center or whatever. Just have them all in the same place. Yeah, I have no idea. First of all, I would like to update that I agree with the memes. I think it'd be great if they had, instead of zero fans for each team, one fan for each team. I think that would be hysterical.
The other thing I would be intrigued by, and maybe like Mark Cuban can work on this, is could there be some kind of channel where your fans could dial into and then put that and have two different speakers, and somehow you could mesh the audio?
That'd be cool.
Right? So say, even if you limit to 1,000 fans, like that would be enough of a sample size to provide the commentary. So it probably wouldn't work because it'd be a little delayed, but I think it'd be fascinating if, like, there was a dunk and he missed and you had all these guys clap and laugh, and on the other side, like, I don't know. Something like that to work out would be fascinating to me, so you could get some kind of semblance of an atmosphere.
Well, I've seen Taiwanese baseball for the atmosphere has the robot fans. Have you seen those?
Yes, I saw that. And they're properly spaced, I think.
Yeah, 6 feet apart with signs and all this stuff. So that could add, like, that's in my head, this is so dumb, because obviously no crowd noise or stadium noise is a huge factor in the game. But, like, to me, visually seeing players with no fans in the crowd would just look so weird. Like, how would you play like that?
And think about the commentators. Where do you put them? And what I mean by that, too, is if they're courtside like normal, being a broadcaster, it would be uncomfortable if you're like, And Victor Oladipo is now 0-for-6 from 3-point range after he runs by you. Like, they don't want to hear that.
Weren't Chris and Quinn in like St. Louis when they were in India playing?
That's right. Yep. Yeah, so they went over to the Fox Sports studios.
Man, that'd be really funny though.
I think the more likely thing that I would see is, say it's at Banker's Life, is you'd put them up in a suite maybe further away.
Yeah, well, and when they were originally talking about like 50 people being the max gathering, you do the math on, you know, the number of players on a team. It's like, well, this is not happening. So, yeah, I'm really curious how they would figure all that out. And would Chris and Quinn have to sit 6 feet apart?
That's a valid point.
You know, like I don't know how all this is going to work. It's very interesting to think about.
No doubt. Yeah. The little things that you have to consider from a franchise standpoint. I don't envy especially what Ryan Carr and the scouting staff too is going through right now, where they have to be so dependent on videos, on communication with people close to an individual, including the agent, while sniffing through the BS that comes along with that. And along the same lines, it's noteworthy how the Pacers don't have a first round pick. And maybe that's a good thing. The fact that this could be a screwy draft, the fact that you're not going to have a draft combine in all likelihood. And by all accounts of people that follow this, it's not a great draft, but maybe this also opens them up to an opportunity where they can find that diamond in the rough and somehow poach him at 28th or get a guy, trade up and get him at 35. I think this, Tony, will be a chance where the best teams in terms of scouting and player evaluation will really rise through the ranks, and we'll get our first look at that, I think, next week with the NFL draft.
It's gonna be like the Niang year where all the fans latch on to the whoever they pick with 48 or whatever, just because it's the rookie, it's the cool new thing. But yeah, it'll be someone they watched a ton of, that's for sure.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it. Scott, I know you've been busy, so thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Happy to join you, man. Good to see you from afar today, Tony.
Yeah, it was. I didn't turn my camera on, even though you did. I felt out of place.
You did? You should have.
I should.
Why not?
You can find all Scott's work at The Athletic. Eventually, I'm going to write an article about Scott because I've told him this.
Are you that bored?
What's up? I can tell how important the Pacers game is based on what Scott is wearing when he shows up. If it's a suit, it's on NBA TV.
You're not the first one that said that.
I know. I think it's so funny. Like, Mark wears a suit every game, right? So I can't use him. It's you. You're the one whose clothing dictates how important the game is. All Scott's work is at The Athletic. It's all tremendous. Fieldhouse Files, he also has his own podcast. You can hear his talk with Jeff Foster, as well as some of the stuff KP said today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be back Friday, and see you then.